you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football and men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our 15th edition this season of Talking Hawks podcast here at HawkeyeDrive.com. Normally, I'm joined alongside my co-host, former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell, every week. Unfortunately, Chris is not able to join us this week. He had something come up at the very last minute here as we were getting ready to record this week's podcast, so is unfortunately unable to join us here. So I'm going to just be doing this one solo, it sounds like. I guess we'll just start off here by recapping what happened this past weekend over at Kinnick Stadium. You had Iowa taking on Michigan. Plenty at stake here in the sense that, you know, you have bowl order. Iowa had just become bowl eligible 2 weeks prior against Purdue. This game, they were down 21-7 early on there in the first half. Actually, that was a halftime score. I would say, you know, and I'll say, I picked Michigan to win last week. I ended up being wrong. Iowa proved me wrong because in the second half, the Hawkeyes were able to score 17 unanswered there to defeat Michigan 24-21, putting Iowa at 7-4 overall, 4-3 in Big Ten play. And as a result of that, you know, obviously Iowa won. They're now in a position where they could be looking at Friday's game against Nebraska, and, you know, if the Hawkeyes win, maybe there's a shot that they end up going to the Outback Bowl. We'll get into that a little bit more here in a little bit. But as far as this game is concerned, with Iowa defeating Michigan, the one thing, obviously, that stood out to me, as I'm sure it did to everybody out there who watched it, is just the play of the defense, in particular the play of the defense in the second half of that game. As I mentioned, they were down 21-7 at halftime, and what you ended up seeing was Michigan was held to 45 yards of total offense there in the second half, and most of those yards came on the very final drive that the Wolverines had before Anthony Hitchens stripped the ball out of Devin Gardner's hands and forced that fumble that Hitchens ended up recovering, and then Iowa was able to finish it out and hold on to get the victory. Obviously, the defense came to play, and I would even argue they came to play for the entire game. Yeah, Michigan had those two touchdown drives in the second quarter, but you got to consider that both of those drives started in Iowa territory. You had one that came off of Jake Rudock's second interception of the game. It was Blake Countess who picked that off, and then the Wolverines went 28 yards. That's when Devin Gardner threw that touchdown pass to Williams, and that was the play where he stiff-armed Tanner Miller just as Miller was about to get him out of bounds. He pushed him down, was able to throw it off of his back foot and complete it. And then the second touchdown came after Iowa punted against the wind. The Wolverines got the ball at the 47-yard line, then went right down the field, and Gardner threw his second touchdown pass of the game right before halftime. That made it 21-7. Obviously, Michigan's first touchdown came on a pick six thrown by Jake Rudock, and that was one of three interceptions Rudock had afternoon there, excuse me. And you know, he didn't play all that great, obviously, with having the three interceptions, but he bounced back there in the second half, I thought. Yeah, he had the third interception there in the third quarter, but right at the start of the second half, to me, that's where the momentum shifted, because Iowa got the ball to start the second half. Even though Michigan had the option to defer it in the sense that they could have taken the wind in the third quarter and had the wind at their back in the fourth, that's what they ended up doing. And what you ended up seeing was Rudock, as it turned out, he was able to complete a touchdown pass that very first drive of the second half to Tavon Smith for 55 yards. It was a play where Smith had to kind of go back and catch the ball with his hand, with one hand, bring it in with the other, and then he got the yards after catch. And obviously, that's one thing Iowa's offense has always predicated itself on under Greg Davis, is simply being able to get yards after the catch and get those explosive plays on those big passing plays like you saw there. And then, of course, the other big thing as well was just with the ground game. You saw the benefit of Iowa coming out of a bye week entering this game, both Mark Weissman and Damon Bullock, although to a much greater extent Mark Weissman. He had a huge run there on 4th-and-2 with Iowa down 7 and driving. Picked up the first down, and then a few plays later he scored a touchdown from 9 yards out that tied the game. And then obviously Iowa got the ball back again. They set up a game-winning field goal from Mike Meyer, and then the rest is history, obviously, with the fumble that Hitchens forced and recovered. And then Iowa ended the game by doing a play-action rollout there with Rudock throwing the ball to C.J. Fedorowicz, who actually had the first touchdown of the game for Iowa there in the first half. obviously that was a good way for Fedorowicz to go out, with that being his senior day as well as a bunch of others. And really, it was the one thing that stood out to me from hearing Coach Ferentz talk after the game was he made the comment along the lines of how his team grew up in the second half there. And to me, I think that's really the story because, you know, in terms of the big picture, I don't know if this is one of those games that is going to go down as being as memorable a victory as, say, you know, in 2008 when Iowa beat Penn State, or, you know, you could pick any game from 09 or what have you. But it almost kind of has that feel in the sense that the parallels are beginning to show, at least in comparison to 2008. What I mean by that is you had Iowa in a position earlier this month where they lose their fourth game. They're sitting at 5-4. You think back to 2008 here for a second. Iowa loses that game at Illinois. Penn State comes to town, number three in the country. The Hawkeyes find a way to win that game. Then they beat Purdue the following week at home. Then they end the season going to Minnesota, crushing the Golden Gophers, and going to Outback Bowl, beating South Carolina 31-10 down there in Tampa. Now, fast forward to right now. They lose that game to Wisconsin. They're sitting at 5-4. They go to Purdue, beat the Boilermakers rather convincingly, get to bowl eligibility. Then they pull off this come-from-behind win over Michigan this past Saturday. Now, Michigan's not on the same level as that 2008 Penn State team by any stretch of the imagination. But now, you look at playing Friday at Nebraska, the chance of if they win, they're 8-4, they're 5-3 in the Big Ten. You have a winning record there. It would be just like in 2008 in that regard. You throw in, too, then, that Iowa would have head-to-head victories over Nebraska, Minnesota, and Michigan, the three teams that they would likely be competing for that Outback Bowl spot for. And, you know, if the Hawkeyes win Friday, there's a good argument that could be made that they belong in that game down there in Tampa. As far as Friday's game is concerned, I think it's one of those things where the winner is going to end up in that game in all likelihood. I definitely think if Nebraska wins, that will be the case because the Huskers have never been to that bowl before. But, yeah, I think with Iowa, maybe the likelihood isn't as strong if Iowa wins as it would for the Hawkeyes to be down there as it would be for the Huskers to be down there if they win, just because of the whole newness thing for Nebraska. But, again, I go back to the fact that Iowa would have the head-to-head on all three of those teams that they would likely be competing with. And, by the way, this is assuming that the Big Ten gets two BCS teams, which at this point in time I think is a given that that's going to happen. Really, just when you look at Ohio State, Michigan State, Wisconsin, all three of those teams are currently – well, Wisconsin's 15th in the BCS standings. I have a feeling they're going to move up here. And then, of course, you have Ohio State, Michigan State playing for the Big Ten championship next week. The one thing that I would point out here as far as Friday's game is concerned, at least what I find interesting, is Nebraska is going to be coming into this with a different quarterback. You've seen Taylor Martinez the last couple of years as Nebraska's QB going into this game. He's obviously out for the season right now with an injury. And right now you're looking at either Tommy Armstrong Jr., redshirt freshman, or Ron Kellogg III, who's a fifth-year senior. You're looking at one of those guys, if not both of them, playing for Nebraska in Friday's game. Armstrong dealing with an ankle injury right now. He's ruled questionable. If he goes, I would think he would start. He started all seven games that Taylor Martinez hasn't played this year. And Nebraska's record in those games is 6-1, the one loss being to Michigan State here a couple weeks ago when they played him in Lincoln. Kellogg III's been a guy that's kind of come in relief. He played most of that game, obviously, against Penn State this past weekend because of Armstrong's ankle injury. And then he's also a guy that, if you go back to earlier this month and they beat Northwestern, he's the one that threw that Hail Mary touchdown to Jordan Westerkamp that allowed Nebraska to win that game over the Wildcats and really kind of put them in a position where they can end this season strong because they enter this game having won three or four themselves. And you look at Nebraska. They won that game over Northwestern. They go up to the Big House, get Brady Hoke his first loss there as Michigan's head coach. Yeah, they lost that game to Michigan State, but a lot of that had to do with turnovers. They had five of them in that game. They still managed to score 28 points against the Spartans. And then this past week, they go to Happy Valley. They find a way to pull out an overtime victory over Penn State. So Nebraska, I think, is definitely a team that is going to present challenges for Iowa. But I will say for Iowa's sake that this is probably the most even this matchup has been since Nebraska joined the Big Ten. You go back to last year's game, obviously the Huskers were playing for a chance to win the Legends Division, whereas Iowa, their season was pretty much shot already entering that game at 4-7. Then you go back to 2 years ago, And Nebraska, you could just tell, was clearly a better team, even though they had just gotten hammered by Michigan the week before. They came to play that day. Iowa completely struggled from start to finish in that game, and the Huskers were able to prevail there in Lincoln the last time these two teams played there. And as far as the whole rivalry aspect is concerned, obviously that was the one big thing that came out of Tuesday when Kirk Ferentz and his players were talking to us in the media, is the whole notion of, is this really a rivalry, because it's been so one-sided here. You go back to 1979 when Hayden Fry first became the head coach at Iowa. They've played eight times Iowa and Nebraska. The one win came in 1981 when Iowa went to the Rose Bowl. Ferentz himself is 0-4 against the Huskers. His first two seasons as Iowa's head coach, when Nebraska was still in the Big 12, they played a home-and-home. Nebraska won. Actually, Ferentz's very first game as Iowa's head coach, Nebraska won at Kinnick Stadium. And then the following year, the Hawkeyes went to Lincoln when Nebraska was number one in the country, lost there. And then, as I mentioned, the two games that they played each of the last couple years on Black Friday, after Nebraska became a member of the Big Ten. Really, this is probably as close to as even a game as Iowa has played in this rivalry since then. Both teams, I think, have a pretty good shot at winning. It's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds. I think the one thing for Iowa here is the Hawkeyes have to find a way to generate some sort of offense, because you go back to those last 2 years that they've played Nebraska, they've only scored 7 points each time. And you go back to that game in 2011 that was played in Lincoln, that touchdown for Marcus Coker came very late in the game. They were on the doorstep of being shut out for the first time since 2000 when that happened. And then last year, you know, Iowa scored early on. It had a lead going into halftime, but Nebraska came out ready in the second half, and we all know what happened there when they met in Iowa City. The Huskers won 13-7. They went to the Big Ten Championship last year. You look at Friday's game, again, the question for me is going to be, can Iowa put up points? They found a way to do it in the second half against Michigan. If they could do it against the Huskers on Friday, then I think they have a pretty good shot. If they struggle there on the offensive side of the ball, that could be an issue, because this is one of those games where you cannot afford for your defense to be out in the field for 35, 40 minutes. This is a game where Iowa's going to have to really dictate the tempo if they're going to get out of there with a victory. So those are kind of my thoughts on that. And I would also just say, too, as far as the whole Black Friday aspect of it, as somebody in the media, I don't personally have a problem with the game being on Black Friday. I think it's good in terms of exposure. I think it's good for the fans to know that they have something to look forward to at the end of each season. But that being said, the one thing I will say that I don't like is the fact that it is an 11 a.m. kickoff. Normally, as somebody who covers this team, I prefer 11 a.m. kickoffs, because I like the fact that I can, you know, cover a game that starts early in the day, finish it up. By the time I leave, it's probably about 6 o'clock. I could still enjoy some of the evening games that are going on in college football later on that Saturday. Here, with it being on Friday, the thing that's kind of a drawback for me is the fact that it's an early game, so as a result, you have to leave the day before, and with the day before being Thanksgiving, it's something that I know can be frustrating for a lot of people. I would imagine it's frustrating for some of the fans that are going to be making the trip here to Nebraska here in the next couple of days, just because you look at it, you're thinking, okay, you could spend time with your family on Thursday. Friday, if it's a 2:30 game, you could just leave for Lincoln that morning. And, you know, make it a one-day trip as opposed to being like a two-day trip, or being something where you leave late Friday and you don't get home until, you know, close to midnight Friday night, Saturday morning. It's one of those deals where if it was a later game, I think it would be a benefit that not just, you know, people like myself in the media, at least the years where they have to travel, but for the fans of both teams that have to make the trip, because I would imagine it's just as tough for Nebraska fans when they got to make the trip to Iowa City every other year as it would be for Iowa fans making the trip to Lincoln this week. So it's just one thing I have an issue with that. But otherwise, I think it's good for both teams to be able to play this kind of game. Obviously, Nebraska's more used to it. Iowa's starting to get more used to it. That's one thing I took away from Ferentz talking on Tuesday, is the fact that he feels he has more of a routine down that he's comfortable with preparing for this particular week, knowing that it is a short week, and knowing that it's something that Iowa's going to have to deal with for the foreseeable future. Because right now, these two teams are scheduled to meet on Black Friday every year through 2019, and Iowa doesn't have a bye week before any of these upcoming games against Nebraska. So at least for the time being, this is something where Iowa's going to have one less day to prepare for Nebraska than they would for any other game they play in the regular season. Last year, I had the fortune of having Brandon Vogel from from Hail Varsity come on and join us on our podcast to discuss the Cornhuskers. Brandon was a colleague of mine at CBS Sports a couple years back when we were both working as part of their Rapid Reports network. He does a great job of covering Nebraska. I highly recommend checking out their coverage. They all do a good job of covering the Huskers there. And I had a chance to talk to him earlier this week to discuss Nebraska coming into this game and get his take on what's going on there in Lincoln and what they're looking at as far as Friday is concerned. So we'll come back here a bit later. We'll discuss the games on this week's HawkeyeDrive.com pick 'em. But for now, I hope you enjoy my interview with Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast here on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. Pleased to be joined by Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity. He was kind enough to join us last year when Iowa played Nebraska, and he's back with us again this week to preview Friday's game. And Brandon, I guess I'll just start off by asking you here, how would you describe the state of this Husker team right now, coming off of an overtime victory over Penn State and entering this game on Friday with an 8-3 record and then 5-2 in the Big Ten?
Is probably best described as bruised and battered, and every team is that to a certain degree in November, but hopefully we said on Monday this would be one of the more injury-riddled teams he's been a part of in his coaching, both at Nebraska and through his years in the NFL and elsewhere. So they've had six offensive linemen go down with different injuries this year. It's still sort of up in the air who will be available against Penn State for that game winner. They had team guys who are making their first team trip in the block that thing. So they're pretty dinged up. Looks like quarterback Tommy Armstrong's going to be a little bit questionable. I think he'll probably be available. Mm-hmm. Mirip Dulas sat out a little bit against Penn State, but he should be available to go. But beyond that, everyone else is probably going to be a game time decision in terms of the offensive linemen.
And you mentioned the quarterback situation. Obviously, they came into this year with Taylor Martinez entering his senior year, and everybody thought that there would be big things from him considering the strides he was making. But then he gets hurt, and now they've been kind of playing two quarterbacks here between Tommy Armstrong and then Ron Kellogg III. You mentioned Armstrong being questionable here on Friday. How do you see this quarterback deal shaking out as far as Friday's game is concerned, and what do you feel each of these guys would bring to the table, assuming they both do play?
Yeah, I would be surprised if you didn't see a good dose of Ron Kellogg, even if Armstrong's healthy. The real difference between the two of them right now is Armstrong's a little bit more of a dynamic runner. His injury is an ankle injury, so even if he's at 85% and you remove some of that element from it, Ron Kellogg's a better passer. And I think for Nebraska right now, what they're trying to do to get through this last month of the season, I think Kellogg can execute things that Nebraska wants to, which is, hand the ball off to a Mirip Dulas 20, 25 times a game. And if he's the more accurate passer, he might even be a little bit better suited to guide this offense against what looks like a pretty stout Iowa defense.
And with Abdullah, he comes into this game leading the Big Ten in rushing. And I felt like he was a guy that was always had this sort of potential, but maybe you didn't just see it as much in years past because he was behind Rex Burkhead. Do you think with him it's just a matter of maturity and being an upperclassman this year? Or do you feel that there's been more to his game this season that has allowed him to have the kind of year he's had to this point?
Well, I think it's sort of the cumulative effect of a guy who – he works really hard, to be pretty plain about it, both in the offseason, during the week, when he's on the practice field. He came in and played right away as a freshman, was behind Burkhead, was basically his top backup, and finally is getting the carries. Well, he got most of the carries last year due to Burkhead's injury, too, and he's approaching some really interesting numbers here for Nebraska this season. He went over 1,400-yard mark against Penn State, and he went over the 1,000-yard mark already earlier this season, becoming just one of eight running backs to have back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons at Nebraska. And if he comes back next year, which seems to indicate that he's going to, he'd be favored to have another 1,000-yard season and become the first back ever to have three straight 1,000-yard seasons. And Nebraska's had some decent running backs over the years. So he's putting up some really, really impressive numbers. It's a real joy to watch him run the football, because running behind this offensive line that's a little dinged up, he tends to create a lot of those yards that he gets. It's not like he's running behind a vintage offensive line from the 80s.
Now, looking at the defensive side of the ball, obviously at the beginning of the season, Nebraska's defense was atrocious, to be kind. They gave up 600 yards in that game to Wyoming, and then UCLA had that comeback. And even against Minnesota, the Gophers were able to run wild on them. But over the course of this month, have you noticed, like, improvement with this team, considering they haven't been giving up as many points? Or is this still kind of a work in progress of what you're seeing here?
Even as far as the calm is a little bit surprising. After their first four games, you know, UCLA and Wyoming, two of those that you mentioned, I sort of did a little bit of number crunching and looked at where teams that ranked where Nebraska's defense was at, which is like 111th, usually ended the season. And not many teams climb much above 50. Nebraska's above that now, which is sort of remarkable. It doesn't happen very often. The key for them has been they sort of simplified things a little bit. They decided on a middle linebacker in Michael Rose, who's a redshirt freshman, but that's the key thing there in terms of getting people lined up in the correct spots and making read calls. And then they started blitzing a lot more. Didn't do quite as much against Penn State, and I'd be surprised if they used it as much against Iowa just because of the way those two teams play. But they started sending a lot of blitzes from the outside and also from the quarterback spot, and that seemed for some reason to sort of ignite this defense a little bit, and they've gotten better against the run while doing that. It's kind of surprising, but it's just honestly Nebraska's improvement defensively, while they're not as good as Iowa is, Matt Frazier, by any means, it's one of the more impressive things I think Bo Pointy's done in his career.
And as far as this rivalry goes here between Iowa and Nebraska, obviously you could make a very valid argument that Friday's game is probably the biggest since these teams have joined, or since Nebraska's joined the Big Ten, just in terms of even strength, this being a more even matchup than the last few years. But with this game, the Big Ten, they came out with their future schedules, and they've had this game set on Black Friday, you know, for the foreseeable future. What are your thoughts on it, and how are people in Nebraska, you know, grasping the idea of playing Iowa on a continual basis still going forward?
Yeah, I think from a fan's perspective, most Nebraska fans are pretty happy with it. It's a strange sort of setup where I think the fans are actually as happy about it as players. You know, we heard some Nebraska players talk today at the Huskers press conference that, like, well, I guess it's a rivalry. There's a trophy there. They tell us it's a rivalry. So you don't get that feeling of like, from the players at least, man, we hate Iowa the way you would, say, for Auburn, Alabama, or something like that. It's definitely not that. But I think you're right, and this game's pretty intriguing. I think the teams are pretty even. And I do think there's potential here for this game to get pretty big. The one thing we have had, and this is both from Nebraska and Iowa, is a game that truly means something in this last one. Yeah, Nebraska was playing for a division title last year, but even had they lost in those wintry conditions in 2012, there was still a chance they could go. So Iowa keeps on the trajectory that they're on, and I think Nebraska has a chance to be pretty good again next year, too. Now, if we get a game here between two teams in the top 15 or even the top 20, that'd be a significant jump from where we've been these first three. So I hold out quite a bit of hope for this series.
And then you were talking about Bo Pelini, and I know you mentioned in something you wrote Monday after his press conference, he said he doesn't believe he's coaching for his job. Do you get that sense, though, that might actually be the case, just considering all the drama that's surrounded him and that this season, really the last few years, of everything he's had to deal with in terms of scrutiny out there?
You know, I was a little bit surprised that it came up as much as it did again today. Not because I thought the Penn State job, you know, definitely saved his job. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But I don't get a sense that sentiment was out there quite as much. But apparently it is, because it was a big focus on Monday. I think, and this is just my personal opinion, some of the people that I've talked to, that he's pretty safe at this point. When you look at it from just the fact that it's Sean Eichhorst's first year, that would be a very, very bold move to make in year one for an athletic 8, 9, 10 wins. They're right in the range of where they've been. Now, ultimately, that's a problem that Nebraska will probably hope to address at some point, but I'd be surprised if it happened after this year. I believe Queenie when he says he's not coaching for his job. I think he'll be around for next year.
I'll get you out of here on this one. As far as Friday's game is concerned, what are some of the things you're going to be looking for from Nebraska's perspective, and what do you feel the Huskers are going to have to do in order to get a win over Iowa and more than likely put themselves in a position where they could be playing in the Outback Bowl on New Year's Day?
It's going to come down to how truly healthy Amir Abdullah is and how well Nebraska is able to run the ball. I mean, that's sort of the case in all football games to a degree, but it's really the case for Nebraska. They're struggling pretty mightily in the passing game, which is unfortunate for them because they have a really great set of receivers. Ron Kellogg might be able to mitigate that a little bit, but after the Penn State game, both when he said that Penn State's defensive front was the best Nebraska had seen to that point, and that he thought Iowa was probably even a little bit better. So it's going to be tough, considering Brett's not quite sure he's going to be on the offensive line at this point. And that's really what their success comes down to. Defensively, I think Brett should be okay. They'll be able to do some things. Penn State really got after him with downhill running, which is a concern from the Nebraska's perspective. But as the game went on, they sort of adjusted and handled some play-action passes out of that pretty well. So I look for Nebraska to remain aggressive in spots defensively, and then offensively it comes down to how well they're running. And as always with Nebraska, you can't count out mistakes and turnovers. They're still pretty turnover-prone. So I think it'll be a pretty tight game either way.
Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity. You can check out his work and covering the Huskers online at hailvarsity.com, and you could also follow him on Twitter at Brandon L. Vogel. It's all one word. Brandon, happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you on Friday, and appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast this week.
All right, thanks, Brandon. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yep, and when we come back, Chris Rowell will rejoin me. We'll discuss the games on this week's HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em, so hang tight. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast here on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. Again, I'm not here with Chris Rowell this week, unfortunately. He had something come up at the very last minute as we were getting ready to record this, as I mentioned, at the top of the podcast. So I'm doing this solo still. I want to thank Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity again for coming on this week to join us to preview Friday's game. And without further ado, we'll get into the pick'em here. First off, I want to congratulate our winner from last week, Jack Maurer. He won the pick'em outright. Jack, I sent you your prize earlier in the week. It should be on its way if you haven't already gotten it. So congratulations on that, and good luck again this week if you choose to participate and defend your crown. As far as this week's pick'em is concerned, a reminder to all those listening here, you can still participate in the HawkeyeDrive.com pick'em. All you got to do is on the homepage, you'll see at the top where it says 24 Heisman Road. Hover over that. You'll see the page that says pick'em. Click on that. You'll see a list of 10 games there. Submit your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score with your Iowa-Nebraska prediction. We'll use that in the event of any tiebreakers that may exist. And one thing, too, because of the fact that Iowa's playing on Friday, the deadline, normally I have it set for 5 p.m. Central on Friday. I've moved it up here to 10:59 a.m. Central, also known as 1 minute before that Iowa-Nebraska game starts. So just want to make you all aware if you choose to participate on the earlier deadline here, because obviously it's going to include Iowa's game against Nebraska Friday morning in Lincoln. We'll jump right into the games here. We'll start in the Big Ten. Oh, by the way, all the other games that we have listed on this week's pick'em are being played on Saturday. We'll start in the Big Ten with the game, if you will. It's obviously the most storied rivalry there is in college football. You have Ohio State against Michigan. The game is being played up in the Big House on Saturday in Ann Arbor. Buckeyes come into this game ranked third nationally. Maybe still have a shot at playing for the BCS National Championship here, depending on how things shake out between Alabama and Florida State these last couple weeks. But I look at this game. Obviously, you've seen both teams in person this year, and Iowa fans have had the opportunity to watch both teams. I think there's no question Ohio State is clearly better. I have a feeling Michigan's going to really struggle moving the football here on Ohio State, mainly because they struggled in short yardage situations. I think Urban Meyer is going to be ready to pounce on that. I think the Buckeyes are going to have their way on both sides of the football, really. I think Braxton Miller, Carlos Hyde are both going to have big games here. And I just have a feeling Ohio State's going to win this game in a rout. I'm thinking something along the lines of 20 to 30 points. Even though this game is being played in Ann Arbor, Michigan just looks like a complete mess right now. So I think Ohio State wins, and I think the Buckeyes win big. So I'm going to take them. Minnesota going to East Lansing to take on Michigan State. The Spartans are ranked 11th in the country. We're staying in the Big Ten here. Michigan State's already clinched a spot in the Big Ten championship game against Ohio State next week, so there's not really much to play for in that respect. But at the same time, Michigan State still has a possible shot at playing in a BCS game. I think a lot of that's going to hinge on, one, if they could beat Ohio State next week, because then obviously they go to the Rose Bowl, or two, if Ohio State ends up winning, but the Buckeyes move up in that championship game, and maybe the Rose Bowl considers taking the Spartans instead of going with Wisconsin for a fourth consecutive year. But either way, as far as this game on Saturday is concerned, the one issue I have for Minnesota, especially after they lost their game to Wisconsin, they couldn't move the ball at all on the Badgers. Their one touchdown came on defense. I think they're going to have similar issues here against Michigan State, being able to move the football. I think Michigan State's going to be able to stop the Gophers' running attack. And as far as throwing the ball, good luck, because I think the Spartans have one of the best. They not only have one of the top pass defenses in the country, but I look at Darquise Dennard specifically. I think this year he's established himself as arguably the best corner in all of college football. I think he's going to be a very high draft pick come later this spring when the NFL draft takes place. I think he wouldn't surprise me if he's one of the first Big Ten players off the board entirely, just because that's how gifted he is. Throw in the fact that this game's in East Lansing, I think Michigan State will win, and I think it's going to set up a very entertaining game next week down there in Indianapolis between the Buckeyes and Spartans. So I'm going to go up Michigan State to beat Minnesota. Now you get into the late afternoon games, and we'll go into the SEC here, because obviously you have the biggest game of the day on Saturday. You have number one Alabama taking on fourth-ranked Auburn in the Iron Bowl there at Jordan-Hare Stadium in Auburn. This is one of those games where I know Auburn is going to be a very trendy pick here, just because they won that game over Georgia. They are coming off of a bye week. Gus Malzahn, I think, is the National Coach of the Year with what he's been able to do there. They already have 10 victories this season after winning just three games with Gene Chizik a year ago. But all that being said, I like Alabama in this game. I think, and I've said this before, and this is actually something that Chris has brought up in the past, a notion that I buy, especially with a team like the Crimson Tide. They're going to be a team that performs better on the road because they're going to be more focused, because Nick Saban's going to have their attention. He can use that us against the world mantra, whereas if this game is being played in Tuscaloosa, I think it'd be a situation where if the game was close, they might tighten up a little bit more, and that could give a team like Auburn confidence. This game being played at Auburn, I think Alabama's going to be very focused coming into this game. There's a lot at stake for them, obviously, because the winner of this game is going to be playing the SEC Championship in Atlanta next week. I think Auburn can make it a close game. I think, and the key for them is going to be, can they run the ball? Because that's been the strength of their team all season long. The problem is Alabama's got a really good run defense. I think they're going to struggle to do that here, and I think that the Crimson Tide are going to find a way to make plays, and I would expect Alabama to remain undefeated and come out of this game with a win. I will say this, if Auburn does win, I don't want to hear any talk about them leapfrogging an undefeated Ohio State. Now, if the Buckeyes or Seminoles lose, and then you have an undefeated Florida State against a one-loss Auburn, or an undefeated Ohio State against a one-loss Auburn, then I can maybe buy into that notion. If neither Florida State nor Ohio State, or rather if one of them has a loss, if both the Seminoles and Buckeyes are undefeated in that scenario, then I think that should be the championship. That's just my personal opinion. I just want to get that off my chest now. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Alabama will find a way to win this game. Then you go back into the Big Ten here Saturday afternoon. You got Wisconsin ranked 14th in the country. They're ranked 15th in the BCS. They play host to Penn State. Penn State obviously coming off that heartbreaking loss to Nebraska this past weekend at home. This game being played in Madison, I think Wisconsin's going to win big, and that's going to put the Badgers at 10-2. And it's going to be one of those situations where, assuming Ohio State, Michigan State, Wisconsin all win, how that Big Ten championship game goes will ultimately decide whether or not the Badgers get that at-large bid, because I have a feeling they're going to jump Michigan State and be the team that does get picked for the Orange Bowl if Ohio State does win the Big Ten but doesn't or has to end up playing in the Rose Bowl because Alabama and Florida State both remain undefeated. So there's still a lot of dominoes there, but I think we have a pretty good idea how those are going to fall. As far as this game itself goes, Penn State, hats off. They had a pretty decent season, even though you could say they took a step back. They went with a true freshman quarterback all year in Christian Hackenberg. I think he'll be the real deal for years to come. But this game, this is a tall order for Bill O'Brien and his squad. I think Wisconsin's going to win and finish the job and put themselves in a position where if the Buckeyes remain undefeated but go to the Rose Bowl, then I think you're going to be looking at Wisconsin down there on South Beach against Clemson here in early January. So I'm going to take Wisconsin, beat Penn State. Now you get into the night games Saturday night, and we got five of them on the slate here. We'll start with the Palmetto State Showdown with Clemson against South Carolina. The Tigers are ranked sixth in the country. They're at 10-1. The Gamecocks are ranked 10th in the country. They're 9-2. Obviously, this is an inter-conference game because Clemson's in the ACC, South Carolina's in the SEC. Not a whole lot at stake there other than just state pride. I think Clemson's in a position where regardless of how they fare in this game, they're going to still end up in the Orange Bowl. Florida State plays for the national championship. South Carolina can lose this game, but if Missouri loses to Texas A&M, then the Gamecocks would still be playing for the SEC championship. So this has no bearing on whether or not you see South Carolina playing in Atlanta next week. All that being said, though, there is a game to be played. And I have a feeling the Gamecocks are going to win this game, part of it being the fact that they are at home. And I think Jadeveon Clowney, I think he's in Taj Boyd's head. I think Boyd might actually struggle a little bit here, and this could end up being something where just the whole mind games, the whole mental aspect of it, I just feel it favors the Gamecocks going in, and I think they're going to find a way to win this one at home Saturday night. So I like South Carolina to win. Now you move out west. You got Stanford already secured a spot in the Pac-12 championship game, thanks in large part to Oregon losing to Arizona last Saturday. But they have one final home game here. At least maybe it's a final home game, depending on what happens later in the evening between Arizona and Arizona State. But they have this last regular season game at home against Notre Dame. The Fighting Irish beat BYU last week. They are back in the top 25 here. They're ranked 25th in the country in the AP poll. I like Stanford to win this game at home. I know Notre Dame beat them last year in a game that went to, I think it was three overtimes, or two overtimes, I'm sorry. It definitely took more time than the initial 60 minutes, but Notre Dame found a way to win. I think Stanford's going to get payback here Saturday night. Obviously, it has no bearing on whether or not the Cardinal play Arizona State at home or have to go to Tempe next week, but I think this is a game that will be personal to David Shaw and his squad. I like Stanford to win at home. Now you get back into the SEC here because you have a very huge game Saturday night. It's the second biggest game to Alabama-Auburn, obviously, but still you can make a case this is the second biggest game in all college football this weekend because you got Missouri ranked fifth in the country right now. The Tigers found a way to win at Ole Miss this past weekend in a game we had on our pick'em. They're now at home against Texas A&M, their old Big 12 brother, if you will. The Aggies got pounded by LSU last Saturday. That was a game that Chris got right and I got wrong on our pick'em last week. And Johnny Manziel may have hurt his Heisman chances in that game. You look at this matchup here. If Missouri wins, the Tigers go to the SEC championship to take on the winner of that Alabama-Auburn game. If Missouri loses to Texas A&M, then South Carolina goes to the SEC championship. I think Texas A&M bounces back and wins this one on the road. And one of the reasons why I feel that way is the one weakness I see with Missouri is a pass defense. And I have a feeling Johnny Manziel is going to have a field day carving that apart. Conversely, A&M has struggled stopping the run, and Missouri could be very effective moving the ball there. So I think a lot of it's going to come down to time of possession if Missouri is able to control that. And control the clock and limit the amount of touches that Manziel gets, then Missouri might end up winning. I just have a feeling that won't be the case. I think A&M is going to end up winning a shootout here, and that's going to send South Carolina SEC championship. So I like Texas A&M to win this game. And if that happens, there's maybe a possibility that A&M gets considered for the Outback Bowl, which, you know, as I said before, if Iowa beats Nebraska on Friday, maybe that's a matchup to look for in Tampa. Who knows? Just some things to keep an eye on here. But I like A&M to win that one in Columbia Saturday night. Now you go back to the Pac-12 here for these last two games that we'll discuss before Iowa-Nebraska. Battle of L.A. You got UCLA taking on USC. The Bruins ranked 22nd. The Trojans ranked 23rd. Obviously, neither of them can win the Pac-12 South now with Arizona State winning this past weekend. But that doesn't, you know, take any of the luster off of this game because obviously it became a rivalry again, if you will, a year ago with UCLA. And Jim Mora, his first season, being able to stomp on USC, and they injured Matt Barkley in the process. You had this game being played at the Coliseum Saturday night. USC's been on a roll here with Ed Orgeron ever since he took over for Lane Kiffin. In fact, their one loss came to Notre Dame. So the Trojans are actually undefeated in Pac-12 play since Orgeron took over. I think that that streak's going to continue here. I like USC at home. I'm curious to see what UCLA psyche is going to be after losing to Arizona State at home last week in a game that the Bruins had to win in order to have a shot at the Pac-12 South. Obviously, they can't play for that anymore. Are they going to, you know, still have that mental aspect of trying to defend their city trophy, if you will, here? Or is this something where USC regains its swagger, regains its pride, and wins? I think it's going to be the latter. I like USC to win this game in the Coliseum Saturday night. And then the other game in the Pac-12 Saturday night, you have Arizona State, who I mentioned has won the Pac-12 South. They play for the Territorial Cup against its in-state rival in Arizona. Here's the scenario here. If the Sun Devils win this game at home, they will play host to Stanford next week in the Pac-12 championship game. Because even though Stanford beat them head-to-head, Arizona State would have the best Pac-12 record at 8-1. Stanford would be 7-2 in conference play. If Arizona goes down to Tempe and gets out of Sun Devil Stadium with the upset win like they were able to do at home against Oregon last week, then the Sun Devils have to make a second trip to Palo Alto this season. They obviously played back in September, and Stanford won that game. Here in this case, I know Arizona had success in thumping Oregon, and Kadeem Carey is a running back I've always been pretty high on this season, but I like Arizona State to win this game at home because the Sun Devils, they took care of business last week at UCLA. They know what's at stake here, knowing that if they win, they get Stanford at home. I think that's huge. I think it's something that's going to be a big factor here, and I just have a feeling that Arizona State is going to win this one at home, so I like the Sun Devils. Now we get to Friday's game being played in Lincoln. Iowa against Nebraska is an 11 a.m. Central kickoff. The game is nationally televised on ABC, so if you're not going to making the trip to Lincoln, that's where you look for it. It will be on ABC no matter where you are in the country. As I said before, I believe the winner of this game is going to have a very real shot at playing in the Outback Bowl in Tampa on New Year's Day. As far as my pick here is concerned, I have a feeling Nebraska is going to win. I know a lot of you are going to probably be disappointed in me saying that, but I'm just being honest. I think Nebraska will find a way to win, mainly because I think this is going to be a lot like the games that Nebraska has found a way to win under Bo Pelini late in the season over the last couple of years. I think it's going to end up being very similar. Now, I do think Iowa will have more success moving the ball offensively, and as I said earlier in the podcast, they're going to need to have success moving the ball, unlike the last 2 years, otherwise they're not going to have a shot. The thing with the Hawkeyes that they do have going for them is the fact that they have a winning road record this year for the first time since 2009, and that's regardless of what happens Friday. And they've been in a similar situation playing in the Horseshoe last month against Ohio State. But as I said before, Nebraska's defense has improved a little bit from where it was earlier this season when it was giving up yards left and right to teams like Wyoming and UCLA. You look at a team like Iowa. As I said, they got to be able to run the ball. They got it, and because I think Nebraska is going to be able to take away the pass, so they really got to get a run game established. Whether that's what Mark Weissman or Jordan Kanzeri, we'll see. But I still think this is a situation where you got to look to Kanzeri as getting the majority of the carry simply because he gives you those dimensions that Weissman and Bullock don't have. I've said that before. I'm going to continue to say that. Although I do think Weissman can be effective because he looked fresh against Michigan last week. But this is also where I feel the short week can maybe come back and hurt him and hurt Iowa, in a sense, if they try to make the game plan focus or centered around him primarily. I think if this team really has grown up, you're going to need to see some of those younger guys step up like they did in the second half of that game against Michigan. That's going to have to carry over for them if they're going to have a chance to win. I think Iowa will be able to, you know, if they can stay on the field for a minimal amount of time, I think the defense will do fine. But the longer they're on the field, the more I think they're going to get tired out and they're going to struggle. And it could be a situation kind of like you saw against Wisconsin this season where the Hawkeyes were in a position to win that game in the fourth quarter, but because the offense couldn't get anything going and it just reached a point where Wisconsin got a few big plays late and was able to bury Iowa. I think something similar could happen here with Nebraska. If you allow their offense, especially with a guy like Amir Abdullah running the ball, I think he's going to be a key part of what Nebraska wants to do offensively on Friday. If you keep allowing him to pick up yards and be able to move the chains, I think that that's something that could wear Iowa out late in the second half. So I'm going to say Nebraska wins this game 16-13. Again, if Iowa does win, I think they have the inside track at the Outback Bowl. If they lose this game, though, then you got to wonder, okay, do they go back to Tempe for the third time in 4 years of Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl? Do they end up falling to the Gator Bowl? Do they even fall all the way to the Texas Bowl? A lot of that's going to depend on what those games Buffalo Wild Wings and Gator, think of teams like Minnesota and Michigan, because those are the teams that Iowa would be competing against. But I would just say this, even if Iowa does lose this game, 7-5, considering where Iowa was a year ago, 4-8, that's something that I think the fan base should feel pretty happy about, just in the sense that it's a three-game improvement. It's 500 play in Big Ten, which is a lot better than what the Hawkeyes were a year ago. And it shows that what Iowa has, you know, been trying to do, it can work, and it could be a springboard for them going into next season. Now, obviously, if they win this game on Friday and they finish 8-4, it could definitely be a springboard going into next year, regardless of how they do in their bowl game. But there's still a lot for Iowa. There's still a lot on the line for the Hawkeyes here, regardless of what happens Friday, because they are going to have that bowl game. They are going to have that opportunity to get 8 wins regardless. And, you know, given what's going to be coming back, I think that Iowa could be in a good position going forward. But as far as this game goes on Friday, I think it's going to come down to the wire. I just have a feeling Nebraska is going to pull away late, and I'll say the Huskers win 16-13. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. Just a reminder that you can become a member of HawkeyeDrive.com. We offer a 3-day free trial. We also offer monthly and yearly subscriptions, $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. If you sign up, you get access to everything on the site, both free and premium. Football, basketball, it doesn't matter. You'll get access to everything on the site. Again, I want to thank Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity for joining us this week to preview Iowa's game against Nebraska on Friday. Chris, if you're listening to this, hope you're having a happy Thanksgiving here, and I want to wish all of you who are tuning in here a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your weekend. If you're making the trip to Lincoln, safe travels out to Nebraska and back. And we'll be back next week. Hopefully Chris is able to rejoin me here because we'll recap Iowa's game against Nebraska. We'll, you know, discuss the bowl scenarios a little bit further, and we'll preview that Big Ten championship game between Ohio State and Michigan State. So for Brandon Vogel and for Chris Rao, I'm Brendan Stiles. We'll see you next week.